What would you do with 30 extra minutes a day? With LG, that time starts coming back. LG appliances are built to make everyday life feel lighter. With LG, fewer laundry mistakes, fresher groceries, and easier cleanup add up to more time back. 30 extra minutes isn't just time saved, it's breakfast without rushing, dinner without stress, and one less thing to juggle. Smart performance, sleek style, and reliability for real life, that's LG. Get your time back with LG. See the latest models and savings now at LG.com.
From the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios at Hooters in Stafford, it's the Killer Bees.
He's Joe Blank. I'm Patrick Grady in for Jeremy Branham. Killer Bees out at Hooters in Stafford. Thanks to our friends at Gentle Ben.
So, Ricky.
We're going to have...
Ricky's a great guy, by the way.
Ricky?
Ricky is the commander-in-chief of Gentle Ben.
Ah, I did not know that.
Great dude.
In fact, I'm going to have my first Gentle Ben experience today.
Well, there you go.
Going to have my first one. I'm going to have a little bit of each.
Does that involve like a, I don't know, an injection or something? Or what kind of experience is that?
It's going to come with a small glass and maybe a little bit bigger glass, depending on whether we're going to drink it clean or whether we're going to put some additives to it.
I heard you like it dirty.
Maybe.
Okay. Well, that's between you,
there
and,
are some things
you and whoever you care to do whatever you do with Gentle Ben.
There are some things that I like dirty. That is true.
I think he prefers you call him Benjamin until you get to know him better.
Now, Joel, the Astros are about 30 days from potentially a critical mass situation with some of the decisions they have to make. We're a month away from Yordan. We are presumably a month away from Brantley, assuming he doesn't have another setback, assuming there's not something else that goes wrong. But Jose Abreu and Martin Maldonado are two guys with OPSs, forget under 700, they're under 600. And for a team that can't score and has trouble scoring consistently, you can't carry two guys, especially one at a premium offensive position, who are hitting under 600 on their OPS. There's going to come if we're still looking at, say, the trade deadline, and Abreu and Maldonado are both under that 600 marker. Hell, if Abreu is under 625, some hard decisions are going to have to
go. No doubt.
When that comes, look, Maldonado's a free agent at the end of the year. He's 30.
It's easier to move on from Maldi because you don't have any kind of a long-term connection to him. This Abreu deal is just absolutely killing them.
You can essentially make Maldonado a coach. The Abreu deal is killing them. He's making $19.5 million. He's got two more years left at $19.5 million. If you make a move to supplant him, does it get him to rededicate himself to try to be better? Does it get him to just drop out? Does the relationship get burned? At some point, you have to not be worried about that because you're worried about winning.
Let me ask you a question. Is it possible? Are we saying that if he worked harder or did something more, he could get it back? Because at his age, we don't know. I mean, some guys fall off a cliff and it's over. Other guys fade into retirement. You just don't know how it's going to go with each individual player. You saw enough of him a year ago, at least the Astros did, to give him a 3-year deal at a large sum of money, thinking he still had plenty left in the tank. Every single time we talk about the fool's gold of Alex Bregman, it's even worse when you start talking about Jose Abreu because he shows small signs of breaking out of it. And then the tank hits empty again, and you go, I don't know if he can ever get it back.
Well, that's part of it. He started off the month pretty good. But then he hit this slide, and I think he's like 3 for his last 23 with 10 strikeouts.
Pretty sure that's not good.
And like Dusty, that's why Dusty gave him two days off. He said he felt like he was seeing him slow down. If he's slowing down, that he went from, you know, hitting fairly well and starting to show, hey, you know what, could he be this guy the rest of the season? Is it finally clicking to going right back into another tailspin and striking out like crazy? At some point, you've got to make a decision. Either he hits or he sits, money be damned. You're chasing a title. You're not chasing feelings.
See, that's a key. That's a very big key that Dana Brown has to understand, that James, that with James Click gone, that you have to have Crane get involved and say, hey, look, if I truly am going to put my checkbook where my mouth is and I am dedicated to keeping this team a World Series contender for the foreseeable future and keeping this run going, then I have to be able to swallow that entire contract or whatever that I have to do and make moves that make this team better this year. You know who you've lost who's not coming through that door to save your ass. You know that you're not going to have Garcia. You know you're not going to have McCullers. You don't know if you're going to have Michael Brantley. So you know going in, that's why I keep saying the time is now for Dana Brown to be hyperactive working the phones, trying to figure out who he might be able to pry loose to help this ball club offensively and from a pitching perspective. And right now the focus should be more so on the offense, which has sputtered all year, and because you don't know when you're going to get Brantley back.
One of the things that we have to do is we've got to put this Maldonado's defense is irreplaceable story to bed. All right, here are the true dirty numbers that the Maldonado truthers don't want you to know. Defensive run saved above average. Yiner, zero. He's league average. Maldi, minus five. He is five runs worse than average. Caught stealing. Yiner's caught stealing percentage is 39%. Maldi's is 22%. The league average is 22%. Your options are league average or nearly double better than league average. Passed balls, Yiner, zero. Maldonado, five. Do you know what five passed balls is? Leading the league most passed balls. This idea that Martin Maldonado's defense is irreplaceable is a bunch of you-know-what.
So here's my question for you, because I saw you tweet this earlier today and I thought it was spot on. The one thing that's going to be thrown back at you, no matter how much those numbers have to make sense and provide clarity to why Diaz needs to be catching at least an extra day, and I said, in a week's time, he needs to be catching 2 to 3 pitchers per week minimum and get that part of the lineup taken care of. Then he can DH and put them to other parts of the lineup to get some extra at-bats and more games. But the other thing that behooves me to ask you this question is, I understand the defensive numbers are down because I think he's been flat lazy behind the plate, Maldi has. And I feel like there's a whole bunch of I don't want to with the way he goes down to one knee. He doesn't block pitches correctly. He lets pass balls happen at the worst and most inopportune times. But he's going to be praised for his ability to manage and be the team psychologist for his pitching staff. We know how much he's meant to Fromber when Fromber starts to lose it between the ears and someone's got to rattle his cage. But can you put enough value on that to justify that he should be out there catching 3 starting pitchers per week minimum when you know he does not bring you anything defensively and you know he does not bring you anything offensively?
If you're insane, sure.
Or if you're insanely loyal like Dusty is.
And Dusty is extremely loyal to Maldonado. But the truth is, you're trying to win games. All right, this isn't the buddy system. This is supposed to be you earn it. Maldonado's not earning squat except the squat on the pine. Maldonado at this point in his career is more, he's better suited to being a catching coach than he is to being a catcher. And they've got it backwards, where Dusty's like, well, you know what, I'm going to have Maldonado catch Hunter Brown because I've got to get him familiar with Hunter Brown for later in the season. Wrong. You've got to start having Yiner Diaz catching Fromber Valdez and catching Christian Javier because he has to get to know them for later on in the season. By the time we get to August, if Yiner's not catching 4 games out of 6, they're doing it wrong.
No, I totally agree with that. There's absolutely no question that – but I don't like the fact that in Dusty we trusties and the fact that Pawpaw's belly – is how he makes decisions in terms of knowing when you're hot, you should be in the lineup, even if it's your scheduled day off. The fact that we joke that anytime anybody hits a home run, they get a day off the next day because they've earned it, means that Dusty's just got to do it right too, no matter how much he likes to fight the numbers.
This is where Dana Brown has to assert himself. See, James Click didn't have the ability to assert himself with Dusty because he let his relationship with Jim Crane fall apart. The biggest thing with Jim Crane was when he screwed up the negotiations with Starling Marte. And when I say screwed up, what I mean is the negotiations between the Astros, the Mets, and Marte, the numbers got higher, and James Click decided, these numbers are just too high for me. I don't want to go there. Rather than going to Jim Crane and saying, look, here's where the numbers are. Do you want to continue to push this forward? He made the unilateral decision to say, all right, I'm out, on a player that the owner told him, I want that guy, go get him. If the owner gives you an edict to go get a player and you don't get him and you did not consult the owner ahead of time, you're going to get your ass chewed out. And Click never knew how to handle the relationship. From that point on, he was in the last year of his contract. He never made that relationship with Crane work. So as the team continued to win, Crane and Dusty became like a two-on-one against James Click. Dana Brown is in a different situation. He's the brand new GM with a nice long contract, and the manager is on the one-year deal.
Yeah, but Pat, the thing is that it's all on Dana's shoulders because the same way I said, you got to wait till the first move Nick Caserio makes to start really truly judging, first big move, to start really truly judging how good he is and how much he should pay, you know, start saddling blame versus getting credit. Same thing with Rafael Stone. Same thing I'll say with Dana Brown. Dana Brown thought he was taking control of a well-oiled machine, and he wasn't going to have to do a whole lot, and this team was just going to keep on cruising down the tracks. And eventually, when this thing started to kind of fade off a little bit, he could start talking about how he's built up the farm system and players he's looking to bring up, signing young guys when they do get up and they start doing things. But now, everything is like thrown out the window, and it's like now it's on your shoulders right now.
Yeah,
now
it is.
The massive amount of pressure that you thought you weren't going to face for another year or two is on your shoulders right now because you've got to make that first move and maybe that second move, and you got till the end to the trade deadline to do it, and all eyes are upon you because it's so hyper-important to this fan base and everybody that loves his team that we keep this golden era of Astros baseball going forward, and they're not in the position they've been in the past where they're sitting high atop the division just waiting for the playoffs to begin and getting everybody all the at-bats and the innings they need. No, it's a totally different story, and you've got to react.
But, Joel, that's the rub. Right there. That's the rub. This is not a 100-plus win team that is winning the division by 10 games. This is a team that's fighting for its playoff life that has been ravaged by injuries to specific positions. They've lost their best hitter. This is not the year where you, all right, so the manager wants to play this guy. It's not really affecting the team in any way, shape, or form. Last year, James Click made a couple of moves, and Dusty basically said, I don't give a damn he got me a better catcher. I'm not playing him.
Dusty oh, that annoyed
said,
me.
I don't give a damn you got me a better first baseman. I'm not playing him. And what happened? Both of those guys were used to playing every day, lost their swings later on in the year from inactivity. All of a sudden, they're not playing all that much. Both guys lose their swings. This is where Dana has to be assertive in, I'm going to get this guy, and you're going to play him. Whether you like it or not, I'm your boss,
see, that's where,
and I'm telling
that's where
you.
He's, you're
and that's
gonna have,
where he's going to bang that's, heads.
That's where there's
going to
be friction, and that's going to be different. Because now you're talking, you need to see who the Dana Brown really is and what he's made of. Because you know that James Click was running the corner, and I'm sorry, don't pick on me, and don't be mad at me, guy, that was afraid to approach the owner. Dana Brown, much like when we talk about D'Amico coming in with a long-term deal, with that comes the confidence to be able to say and push back and say, if I don't like a move that you're thinking about making, I'll say something. If I don't like something that you're trying to do, I'm going to step up and say something because I've got the security of knowing I've got a five-year deal in my back pocket. Dana Brown's going to have the cojones to come in and say, you got to trust me that we got to make this move right here, and we got to do this now to salvage this season. And he's got to be able to push back with Crane, and he's got to line up his reasons why. But Crane's also got to be open-minded to understand, hey, look, this guy's not going to be a walkover for me. He's not going to be a puppet I can control. And we've got to find a happy medium because you know Dusty's going to get in there too, and he's going to have his say. Bagwell's going to have his say. Dana Brown's got to be able to say, hey, look, I know you guys have been there and done that in different aspects of baseball. If this truly is my team to make my decisions, I better be able to put my foot down and say, this is what this team needs, and I'm going to go get them.
It's exactly that, Joel. He's got to be able to, A, work Jim Crane to, this is the move we need to make. And he's got to be able to tell, look, I'm not intimidated. You might be going to the Hall of Fame, but this is my damn team. And he's got to have, like you say, he's got to have the stones to say, you're a Hall of Fame manager. I love you. I respect you. This is what we're doing.
That's going to be a big – kind of, you know, fork in the road that he's going to have to attack that Click wasn't able to do. And he's got to prove himself. And that's why I'm saying all eyes are upon him right now. And I don't think he expected it to happen this quick. This was going to be this kind of kumbaya time where he could settle in and get involved. He's got to dig his boots in right now and make some things happen.
All right. Now, we've had, you know, a lot of look, Dana Brown's got to get a few things together. You know, does the team need a bat? Does the team need an arm? Do they need more than one? I'm going to give you some bats that are guys who are expected to be available at the deadline. I want to go through them with you and see, do you like them? You don't like them? Is there a potential fit? We're going to go through some bats. Could these guys be available? Do you make the move? Next.
Hey, right now, before we go to the break, I want to tell you about the good people at Apollo Men's Health. I've been telling you about them for quite a while. I'm going to tell you about them for quite a mile longer because they've gotten me results and they can get you results too. You just don't have the energy to win the day. You're not trying to win a gold medal at this point in your life. You're trying to win the to-do list, trying to get everything done for work, trying to get to the gym, trying to make things happen there, and then you're going to try to recover quicker once you've been. Then you're going to have time for your family and all the other things you need to do, and you just get tired and you don't feel like you got any energy. That's why you go see the people at Apollo Men's Health. They're getting results for people on a daily basis. They take care of things. They starts with hormone therapy or B12 shots, where you get more energy and you feel the results. Both men and women are in the lobby, and they are in there getting results and singing the praises of Apollo Men's Health on a daily basis. You want to lose, I don't know, 6 pounds a week like some of these guys here in front of me should probably be working on? All you got to do is get involved with Semiglutide, FDA approved. All there right there at Apollo Men's Health. They're going to take care of you. Think about how that adds up. You don't have to be analytical to figure out. If you could lose up to 24 pounds in a month, you could feel better, you could look better, and you could have more energy in your life to do the things you need to do. Go to ApolloMH.com right now. See all the services that they offer. If there's a couple that you think might be able to help you, get there right now and start talking to them about how they can get results for you. Mention my name, Joel Blank, free B12 shot on your first official visit, or a body composition analysis, which can help you chart your results and see when your body fat goes down and your muscle mass goes up and all your numbers make sense. By the way, when you get in there, you're going to find out these people truly care about you. So they're going to ask you questions. They're going to get you answers if you're honest with them and tell them what you're trying to do. Go see my friends at Apollo Men's Health. Two locations near downtown Houston to better serve you. Third one just opened up in League City, so you guys down south can get there too. Check them out. Tell them I sent you by. The good people at Apollo Men's Health.
From the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios at Hooters in Stafford, it's the Killer Bees.
We're out at Hooters in Stafford on the Southwest Freeway, thanks to our friends at Gentle Ben. He's Joel Blank. I'm Patrick Creighton in for Jeremy Brannon. Appreciate Jeremy hooking us up with the Gentle Ben guys to take care of us today. Don't know what Jeremy's doing today, but he's not here at Hooters.
He's hitting the Schlitter bong. Right, Joe?
Well, you know what? We're eating well, and we have some beautiful ladies here with us.
Eating well? Blake is here. Of course he is.
And we're having ourselves a good time. Now, it's a little bit of a shorter segment, so I'm going to push the trade guys to 1:45 because we got Bad Take Boulevard coming up bottom of the hour.
Yeah, we got a lot to talk about there.
So let me push this on you. Let's say we are getting closer to the deadline, and the options that the Astros have really don't involve a first baseman.
Okay. I'm okay with that. Jeremy has been more focused on that. I'm okay with that.
Let me posit you with this. How would you feel about the Astros calling up Corey Lee, who is hitting fairly well at AAA right now? He's, he's hitting .286. Five homers, 16 doubles. Also has 11 stolen bases. Hitting .286, .750 OPS. Calling up Corey Lee, who is an excellent defensive catcher. Make him the number one catcher and Maldi the two. Make Yiner Diaz your primary first baseman.
I think it's a possibility. I just don't think this first year they're going to be willing to pull the plug completely on Abreu. I think they're all holding out hope. We've heard Bagwell on the broadcasts believe, and we've heard Joe Espada talk about how this guy's going to break out of it and he's going to put this team on his shoulders and he's going to carry him. We saw little glimpses of that for short periods of time for a few games here and there. We haven't seen enough to believe that, but I do believe that there's going to be a time where if he doesn't start figuring it out, his playing time is going to be diminished And if it's Diaz, or even look, last night it worked for Dubon. It worked in the fact that you keep another good bat in the lineup. And just like Yuli was a converted infielder that played first, it's a lot easier for an infielder to start working on scoops and picks than it is to take some big guy that looks like he's the right target to play first base to get there and do what you need to do. My whole focus, Pat, has been not to focus on getting a first baseman. If you want to get a guy that can play multiple positions that's versatile enough to play corner outfield and first base, so be it. But I would get, again, we go back to insurance policies. You talked about Vasquez. You talked about a year ago with Mancini. If that's kind of the way they focus too, your insurance policy should be there's a chance Michael Brantley never plays for the Astros this year. If that's the case, I'd be looking for a corner outfielder. I'd be looking for a left fielder. It's a huge plus if he can play first too. But I'd be looking for a bat that can do that because now as we continue to play musical chairs with all the different positions guys are playing, you've got a guy that can play multiple positions to make sure he gets enough at-bats but keeps a good another good bat in the lineup.
This is why I bring this up to you, right? There's got to be a shelf life on how long you're willing to ride Abreu before you finally decide, all right, either he's going to snap out of it or we are now at the drop-dead point where we can no longer wait to see if it's going to happen. And to me, that drop-dead date is July 31st. If we're getting to the deadline and Abreu's still hitting 220 with a barely 600 OPS, and, I mean, look, he's a butcher in the field. If he's not going to hit, you got to start making some other plans. Now, Mauricio Dubon played first base yesterday. He said it's the first time he's played first base since high school. He was 135 pounds.
Yep.
And he had a couple extra base hits.
That's what I'm saying. Right now, you'll take your lumps defensively as long as he does that because Abreu's not doing that.
And he did a real nice job with short hops, a couple of picks, handled the ground ball. Dubon, because he's an excellent defensive player up the middle, certainly knows how to handle short hops and weird hops and things like that. To him, it's more the footwork around the bag. But as far as what to do, how to do it, how to field the ball, Dubon's got all that under control, and he's got a good, better arm than the
That's
average
what I said.
First baseman.
It's easier to convert a middle infielder to a first baseman because he's already very, very skilled at picking up ground balls and being able to get picks out of the dirt and digs out of the dirt, as opposed to taking a guy like Yordan that everybody wants to make a first baseman, or bigger guys that you need really significant amount of time in the offseason to really work on footwork and all the different glove work that you're not used to getting because most of these guys are converted outfielders or catchers, and you're trying to make them a first baseman on the fly, and it's just not that easy, especially in the major leagues when guys are throwing the ball 90 plus miles an hour across the diamond, and it's your responsibility to either knock it down or catch it and also have your foot on the bag. That's why Dubon, I believe, is a guy that can be converted in the short term to fill in at first base. But at the same time, I need to know that I hear it from all these people. Oh, you know, Abreu's a workhorse. He's working on some things. And everybody coming in is to his defense. There's going to be a time when this team says, as much as we love this guy, we need to go away from this guy if we truly have our eyes on the prize, which is winning a World Series, not winning the fan base over or winning, making sure everybody wins over Abreu to fit, you know, to be the guy in the dugout. That's not going to happen if you're truly focused on winning a title.
No, that's the short and long of professional sports, right? It's not a work result. It's not a work-related industry. It's a results-related industry. You can put on all the work that you want. If you don't get the results, you don't play. That's the meritocracy of sports. And look, I'm sorry. I think Jose Abreu has had a phenomenal career. I have incredible respect for a guy who's an international legend and has put together a 10-year run in Major League Baseball. It's been phenomenal.
Being a great guy in the clubhouse and a guy with a long resume doesn't get you extra base hits and hits for average this season down the stretch when you're trying to win a World Series. I'm sorry. It's not about what you've done and what kind of a guy you are. It's what you're capable of doing for this new team that spent a boatload of money to bring you into their clubhouse and make a difference. You're not making a difference. You're making people wish that Yuli Gurriel was still playing first base for the Astros.
And that's exactly it. You know what? I love, the guy's had a great career. But that career has bought you 4 months of playing time to show that you still have it. If you can't show you still have it in your 4 months, I'm sorry, you're going to have to sit, go back to the drawing board in the offseason, figure out something that works for you, come back in spring training, and show me you can hit again.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, that's the thing. You can't reward him for what he's done. You can't reward him for the intangibles. you want to reward him for what he's here to do, which is hit baseballs at a fairly good rate for average. I don't care if he hits home runs or not. But hit, especially when Dusty keeps putting him in the middle of the lineup, you've got to be able to have the table set for you and knock them in. And when it's not set for you, do what he used to do against the Astros. Go the other way. Hit line drives through the infield. Get on base so others can knock you in with a lineup that, when healthy, is capable of doing that.
And here's the bottom line. They don't have the prospect capital to make a lot of big moves. They've got the prospect capital to make one.
But you mentioned the one guy that's going to help get the guy that you need to bring in. Because of Diaz's performance on the big league level, and he's your catcher of the future, I want Corey Lee to rip the cover off of it right now, because Corey Lee's going to be the centerpiece of whoever you bring in.
Well, he's hitting the ball AAA pretty well right now. Like I said, he's hitting .286. He's got 16 doubles, and he's got 11 stolen bases. So he is equating himself offensively pretty well. Coming up next, time to take a ride down on Bad Take Boulevard. It's the Killer Bees live from Hooters and Stafford.
So many bad takes on sports. What do you do with all of them?
Only there is something in your head to control the things you say.
Well, the Killer Bees use them to build an actual street where they can get run over for all eternity. What's that street? Bad Take Boulevard.
Bad take. Time to take a ride down a Bad Take Boulevard. And Joel, we got some winners. Oh, we got some winners today. We're going to start off with a very hot prospect in the NBA draft. Comes up later on tonight. Brandon Miller had some things to say regarding the GOAT of basketball. And that it is not LeBron James, but...
It better be Michael Jordan, first of all, but go ahead, continue.
It was Playoff P. Here's the quote.
I actually don't think LeBron is, you know, the GOAT of basketball. I think my GOAT of basketball is Paul George. And, you know, I always grew up watching him, so it's never just LeBron.
Because he grew up watching him, Joel.
Don't even get me started on Brandon Miller when he's not on the basketball court. But the fact that you made this dumbass statement, if this is part of the interview process with an NBA team, I'm looking at everybody in the room going, do we really think that this dude has what it takes between the ears to execute our game plan and do what we need to do in the NBA? He thinks Paul George is the greatest. We didn't say who's your favorite basketball player right now or who was your favorite basketball player growing up. They said, who's the greatest basketball player of all time? You can do numbers. You can do years. You can do championships. You can do individual awards. You can't do Paul George.
All I heard was, Dad, you can't fool me. Dad, because I'm a moron. Yeah. Paul George? Paul George, who shoots in the playoffs about as well as you and I do? Hell, I can't even say as well as you do. As well as I do?
Michael, LeBron, Kobe. Paul George ain't in that category. Like, you know what? Paul George is an all-star caliber player. Paul George is a max player. Paul George is an all-star. I mean, he's a good player. But you're putting him in the rarefied air and trying to put him in the greatest conversation? That's a horrible look for a kid that's trying to make a good impression in the league he's joining.
Paul George isn't in the Patrick Ewing tier.
I know. And I would say not yet, but he's never going to be. He sits more games than he plays now that he got the money.
That was a winner take. Now, if you're a GM and you hear a guy, does it make you say, I can't take this guy too?
It makes you have deep thoughts about it. It makes you have extremely long conversations with your staff about it, going, hey, let's just start talking about, I don't need tests, I need conversations. I need to talk to this kid. That's why when you brought him in a second time, if you're Charlotte, there better be some in-depth conversations that aren't just about, like, what he can do or what happened that he's not talking about while he was at Alabama. It's, can he think the game through? Is this just a brain fart, or is this something that should be a concern if you're going to try and make him a centerpiece of your franchise?
You know, we're halfway through the show. We really haven't heard from Stumpmaster Flex yet. Hey, Joe, what's your take on this?
Well, I think there's a good chance Brandon Miller is going to be a Houston Rocket tonight, so I hope you guys like this take, because reports are that the sportsbooks have Scoot Henderson now as a minus 360 As a betting favorite to go number two overall. Amon Thompson, his odds have shifted dramatically towards the number three spot, and I'm starting to wonder if the guy who loves Paul George might not be a Houston Rocket tonight. So,
oh my God.
How are we feeling about the four pick?
Joe and I were talking about the odds in Vegas tell you so much the day of the draft in NFL and in the NBA. But I've heard Amon Thompson's stock is going through the roof. I know that there are teams that really like Scoot. I know Portland's a wild card because they're trying to figure out, are they keeping or are they shipping Dame? And if so, then they need a point guard. If not, are they getting him some help? The Rockets are once again not controlling their own destiny unless they make a trade, but they could have a really good player fall in their lap. Based on raw talent, they say Brandon Miller next to Wembanyama is the most talented player in this draft. But as you look at it from what the Rockets need, the best player to fall into their lap would be Scoot to play point guard. I just don't see that happening.
I just have major reservations about the character of Miller.
It's fair to say that.
To me personally, the events that he was willing. I know he didn't shoot anybody, but you were willing to go get a gun and bring it to someone who was in an agitated state in public, and you thought this was okay. You can't tell me that it never crossed your mind. Why would somebody ask me to bring them a gun at a club when they're mad? Why would that happen? It's not because, well, I'm just going to show it to somebody, because it doesn't need to be loaded if you're just going to show it to somebody. I have major character issues with that guy.
There were reports that he was there on the scene when the shooting occurred. His car, there were reports, had bullet holes. There were reports that he was blocking the car from escaping when the people that were doing the shooting were doing the shooting. I don't know if they've ever – obviously charges haven't come up against him, but there's also a reason why his lawyer is telling him not to talk about it. That's a concern. The concern for me, Joe, based on what you said from a rumor perspective, is the thing all along is if Charlotte has a point guard as good as Ball, why do they need another one? But if you think that you have concerns about Miller, is that part of the reason why Amon Thompson's stock might be rising right now?
I mean, we talked about this yesterday too, Joe. Like, there's no rhyme or reason, because as they're letting Michael Jordan – turn a 800% profit on the Charlotte Hornets, they're like letting him make the final decision. It's like, this is Michael's decision that he might like Scoot more than Brandon Miller. And I think in theory LaMelo Ball could be an off guard too. Like, that's where I think Scoot Henderson and LaMelo could work. So like, wouldn't shock me if that's the pick tonight.
Joe, here's the concern I have about that. LaMelo Ball, I think the biggest blessing you can have is have him play point guard, because now there's limitations to how much he should be shooting. And coaches can go at him with that. You put him at shooting guard, now all bets are off. Now all shots are going up. And now you look at a totally different situation about a guy that's going to go out and try and get his. And that could completely make the rest of this system dysfunctional, because he's going to do whatever he's going to do. I like the fact the way it's set up now. I think that's the way it should continue to be set up. So we'll see how that all works. But I think there's lots of concerns going into what happens in the draft tonight at the top.
We got a second candidate here on Bad Take Boulevard, Joel. This would be a personal friend, Stephen A. Smith.
Not a personal friend of mine.
With this comment regarding the Warriors and Mr. Triple Single, Draymond Green.
Draymond, does the Warriors championship window close if they lose Draymond? Absolutely.
What? The Warriors' window is closed if they lose Draymond Green,
yeah, I mean,
who has averaged a triple-single, Joel, for five consecutive seasons.
Is there any way that that makes sense in terms of leadership? Is that important? Because other than that, like you said, how are you telling me that what he brings to the table is more effective than anything that you could get from somewhere else? Draymond as a triple-single is not putting up any kind of numbers that make sense for a Warriors team that, yeah, leadership means something, and he brings a lot of that to the table with that team. He also punched a teammate in the face last year. So at a certain point, you have to weigh it in terms of all the technicals, all the drama, all the punches, all the things that he does on his podcast and says versus what he means in that locker room. This is a Maldonado conversation. This is a Martin Maldonado conversation. because he's supposed to be managing the pitching staff. He's supposed to be being the team psychologist. But you're going to max money a guy like that and expect to get production out of him too? He maybe has more of a chance than the machete of being effective getting some stats, but there's no way he deserves a max contract. The fact that he walked out of that contract
could
be a massive mistake.
I when it happened, I was like, this is going to be the mother of all backfires. You walked out of a $29 million deal, what, so you could get $40 million over 3 years? That doesn't make any sense. The Warriors run a system that maximizes the strengths and abilities of Draymond. He's still a triple single.
There's no doubt about it.
He goes anywhere else, and he is going to be a flop. And Steve Kerr specifically mentioned him punching Jordan Poole in the face as one of the reasons that that team never came together this year. So you can't say leadership when this is the guy who broke your team. If I was the Warriors, I'd be like, you know what? There's a door. Don't let it hit you where the good Lord split you.
No, that's the biggest thing. Like, if you're a veteran, there's other ways to police the locker room than punching the guy in the face. And you have to realize the ramifications are not just short term. It's not in a week and everybody gets over it. Jordan Poole was not the same player. There's a reason why Jordan Poole got the money he got, because he was playing his ass off. And he was a really, really good player. And all of a sudden, between Draymond Green's punch and the pressure of the playoffs, Jordan Poole became a liability that was shooting every time but not making anything. And Golden State said this offseason is about trying to figure out if they can have both these guys on the roster next year.
No, and I think Jordan Poole starts playing a whole lot better when Draymond Green's wearing a different jersey.
If that happens, and I don't know if that's going to happen, but we'll see.
All right, Joel, I'd tell you, let's get into some of these bats that might be available for the Astros between now and the deadline. One, let's pick your brain. Who you like, who you think is a fit, because fit is important. We'll get to that next. Killer Bees live from Hooters in Stafford.
From the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios at Hooters in Stafford, it's the Killer Bees.
So, we're at Hooters. What does Joel Blank order? Salad.
Yeah?
He also does have a plate of wings. Yeah. He's got naked wings.
I'm all right.
But he's got a salad with grilled chicken. He's looking for some red onion.
You have a little man.
And then he's got a...
You have a little man that has a shirt that fits like sausage casing over there that's trying to have a problem with that. But that's fine. I don't care.
But then he's got naked wings and a cup of ranch.
That's not ranch. I'm not going to use it. I didn't ask for it.
Oh, so not, the ranch is irrelevant. You're not using the ranch.
Yeah.
We put the honey mustard on the
okay,
salad.
Okay, Mr. Dietetic. You went to a breakfast shoot with Nate Griffin this morning and had yourself blueberry waffles with two scoops of ice cream butter. And
was whipped cream. Let's get it right.
Okay, and then you hammered a big plate of boneless with a bowl of fries. Okay.
And? That's what you get when you
the
come to Hooters.
Is I
you get
don't
wings
care.
And fries, baby.
The difference is I don't care, and you're putting me on blast for eating healthy. I'm sorry, not sorry.
I didn't put you on blast. I just said that's what you're eating.
That's right.
That's all. Just said that's what you're eating.
Okay.
Let's get to some potential bats that might be available for the Houston Astros. Now, Joel, this is one of the main concerns for me when it comes to getting a bat.
Okay.
Where are they going to play? Because if Yordan comes back, they're not going to play left field. If Brantley comes back, left DH is tied up. You're not sitting Tuck. You're not sitting Briggy. You're not sitting Pena. You're not sitting Altuve. Martin Maldonado could hit 125. He's still going to play. They're going to have to make a decision how committed they are to Abreu. But so far, it looks like they're going to be committed to Abreu. So there's only so many places a guy can play. Whether or not Brantley comes back does change the amount of flexibility that you
have. But that's the big if. That's where it all starts. For me, that's where it all starts. As much as Abreu has underachieved, it all starts with me, the if Michael Brantley comes back. It used to be when Bagwell told you it was opening day. Then you just said, okay, in a month's time, maybe. Then the fact that we've gotten to this point in the season and we still haven't seen him, there's a better chance in my mind that he doesn't play a single game for the Astros this year than it is that he's going to come back and he's going to be effective when he comes back. So if that's the case, to me it says that's where it starts. A left fielder that can play multiple positions to get other at-bats. While Yordan's out, you still know that there's going to be a spot, whether left field or DH, where you can get more at-bats, depending on how you use Yiner. And this team needs offense. It would be a great problem to have a very solid above-average major league bat that I would have to find a home for in this lineup, as opposed to trying to make middle infielders into first basemen and trying to get creative with a guy that the manager doesn't trust as catcher but is hitting the cover off of it so he can stay find a spot in the lineup. That I would rather have an extra bat that can play than worry about the way that they're doing it right now.
So let's start with a local guy, Rosenberg's own Randall Grichuk. He can play all three outfield spots. He missed the first month of the year because he had hernia surgery. Hasn't found the home run power yet. Usually he's a pretty decent home run hitter, but he's still hitting a lot of extra base hits. He's hitting .297. He's got an .807 OPS. Randall Grichuk now, he's a little bit older. He's 30, going to be 32 in August.
What's he got left on his deal?
Last year, $9.5 million. It's last year of his deal.
Go get him. Go get him right now, because this is a guy that, if you remember, when all the Astros fans that love to bang on me for, all, you know, if a take misses, when I got so tired of waiting on Kyle Tucker to turn into Kyle Tucker, I started bringing up names like Kevin Kiermaier and Randall Grichuk to say the fact that there are guys out there that you could possibly get a package for Kyle Tucker if he continues to underachieve. And one of the guys that I've always thought would be a good fit here was Grichuk. So if you can get him right now and you don't have to give up anything of significance and you've got a guy that can play multiple outfield positions, it's a guy you got to explore. And because it's expiring, you're not going to have to give up as much. But you got to balance this because, as you said, Corey Lee's probably going to be the main guy that gets you something that you're going to get in return. If you don't have to give him up in this deal, if you got to just give up a couple of double-A prospects and something else, fine. And you save Lee for a pitcher or something else that you need to go get, so be it. But I like the fact that you're adding a guy with major league experience that hits for average, that has the right kind of OPS, going in the right direction, trying to get out of a team that's a no-win situation.
This next guy, I think, is a terrific fit positionally. May not be a very good fit personality-wise. This is Joe George's favorite player, Cody Bellinger. There's a lot of history with Belly, with the Dodgers and the Astros, but he is having a resurgence season. He's never going to hit like he did his MVP season, but he's hitting like he did in the years before that. He is a guy who plays a very good center field. He can also play first base. He can play the corners. This season so far, Bellinger's hitting .252. He's got 7 homers. He's got 10 stolen bases. He's got a .773 OPS. He is making $12 million. He's got a mutual option for $12 million next year, so you know he's definitely opting out of that to get back on the market. So essentially, this is a rental player. Where would you be? Look, he's a good defender. He's a power bat. He runs. But he's a former adversary. Can you make a marriage work with that guy?
Well, I think Jeremy and I talked about this a week or so back, and it starts with a conversation with Altuve and some of the veterans in that locker room that are still remaining, the McCullers of the world, though he's not there as frequently. But it starts with Altuve and Bregman. Is this some guy that you could coexist with, that you want, that you think could help you? If that's the case, then, okay, first hurdle has been accomplished, and you've gotten over it. But I think that the other thing that you got to look at is, from the perspective of a guy that fits what you're trying to do, he does as long as he continues to hit. And he's healthy. He got hurt here in Minute Maid Park when he made a hell of a catch up against the bullpen fence. He hasn't been back really since to the level that he's been playing. He was playing at before he got hurt, where he was trying to resurrect his career. He's playing for a new deal. I don't think you'd have to give up that much to go get him. The Cubs have been playing good baseball lately too. So if the Cubs are still winning, I don't know when they're willing to pull the plug and say they don't need him or don't want him. But, again, because it's expiring, I think you don't have to give up that much, and you get a guy. It starts with can Altuve and Bregman coexist with him and feel like it's okay to bring him in?
So you mentioned the Cubs. The Cubs have won 8 of 10. They are 2 under. But in that division, that only leaves them 3.5
that's right.
out. But you've got to win the division because nobody in that division is making a wild card.
Right.
All right.
I think he's going to be available, just so you guys know. Like, I think they're going to trade Bellinger.
When?
I think he'll be available like the week of the deadline. Because
I agree with that.
Their top three prospects are outfielders. So like Peter Crow Armstrong's the main one that people want to see up at some point this season. Like I think there's a really good chance that they want him up, and Bellinger's the way you get him up there is you move Bellinger, you're not gonna keep him. But I don't remember the exact deal on him too. there's some kind of like player option that has to vest where he's only worth $6 million next year too. So if that doesn't vest, you could keep Bellinger next year for $6 million too. So like that could be a huge win for the Astros or whoever gets him.
Well, he can opt out. It's a mutual option for $12 million. He could opt out of that deal, and he's definitely going to opt out of that deal and go back on the market. That's why you're looking at it as
a
rental. Because the Cubs know he's going
to
go back on the market, you might as well trade him, get some value in return for him, because like you said, their top prospects are all outfielders. Third guy for you. He is absolutely freaking raking right now. And Astros fans probably remember him because he hit one out of the damn stadium. That's Jorge Soler.
I'd be looking at him a lot.
Soler, who, you know, in 2019 had 48 homers. He can play both corners. Now, he's not a great defender, but he can play both corners, and you don't have to be a great defender to play left field at Minute Maid Park. He's making $15 million. He's got a player option next year for $9 million that he's definitely opting out of. But right now, Jorge Soler is hitting .252. He's got 21 homers and an .896 OPS. He's blasting the ball as well as he has since that 2019 season where he hit a career-high 48 homers. Astros fans know the kind of power that guy has. He plays for the Miami Marlins, who, believe it or not, are in second place in the National League East, six games behind the Braves. But they're the Marlins. They know they're not going to re-sign him. Another team that is going to look to, hey, we'll trade him, we'll get value, and we'll start bringing up our younger guys.
You know what Miami needs, by the way, that they've said that their general manager has come out and said that they're looking to get?
Wait. Does this involve the tools of ignorance?
It involves right in the wheelhouse of the Houston Astros. They need a long-term young catching prospect.
So it does involve the tools of ignorance.
So therefore, it's made to be too. When the minute I heard this, I was like, ding, 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 ding. I got a deal. I know what you can do. I know what the Astros could do. This could help. This would be a deal that they should go after right now.
See, I said, does it involve the tools of ignorance? And he threw me a curveball and said no, and then went, psych.
You buckled. But you didn't break. You fouled it off. You spit on a tough pitch.
Gotta keep fouling them off till you get one you can handle. Those are guys that I think are available. And again, if we're talking about Brantley not coming back,
what do you guys think of Ian Happ? Someone texted that.
Ian Happ's going to get expensive. I mean, I don't know that he's having a great season this year, but in the past he's had very good seasons.
But isn't that an advantage of the Astros if he's not having a good season this year? And you think you might be able to resurrect him?
Does that help you? Because he's going to start to make money soon.
Oh, he's got. It depends on the deal. I don't know what the deal is. I'm just reading the text on that one to see what you guys thought. But if his deal is going to handcuff this franchise with all the contracts they got coming up to, I don't think they should be able to looking at that. Especially because you don't know what's going to happen with Abreu.
So Happ is making almost $11 million this year. It was his final year of arbitration. So he is a free agent at the end of
but
the
again,
year.
But again, it shouldn't cost you as much if you think you're going to lose him and the team knows they need to get something for him if they don't have any intention of bringing him back. Joe, you got any thoughts on that?
He's actually not doing that bad. .265, 5 homers, 18 doubles, .794 OPS. He's kind of right in line with his career numbers. I like Ian Happ as a player. As long as we're talking, hey, we don't care. If you're getting the rental price for him, That's a guy to look at.
I think Happ would be a really good fit, switch hitter. I mean, and look, this is a guy, too, that did once upon a time. He was called up as a second baseman. He played third. He played short. Like, they used to move him around all the time, so I don't know if he would even be back to open to going back to the infield if you ever need him. But Ian Happ provides you a lot of flexibility. Honestly, like, we spent a lot of time on the show talking about Bellinger and Stroman, and I think, really, if you're going to talk Cubs trade talks, like, Ian Happ and Kyle Hendricks might be the two guys that really should be talking about.
Stroman is a good pitcher having a career year. That guy's got some issues.
Why?
He is extremely outspoken.
Yeah.
He says some wild, wild stuff. And he gets into it with the fans. He gets into it with the media.
But you know what he does? He gets outs right now.
Oh, he's having a career season.
And if you don't have to deal with him long term, you're just going to have to bring him in long enough to get you through the rest of this season. And then if he's a problem, you don't have to keep him.
He and Giolito are probably going to be the two most expensive pitchers on the market. We'll get into that maybe another day, because coming up tonight, is the NBA draft, Joel. And look, this is a huge day for the Rockets because they've got, not only do they have two picks, including the number four pick, they got the number 20 pick, but the NBA draft, there are always a truckload of trades that go down at the draft. The Rockets are certainly going to make some trades. Let's get into what the Rockets could possibly be doing in the draft coming up tonight. Killer Bees, he's Joel Blank. I'm Patrick Graydon in for Jeremy Branham. We're live from Hooters on the Southwest Freeway in Stafford.